attention to you. I'm going to return control of your body to you, because it'll be more efficient, but you'll find you can't shoot me. I lowered the gun. Which me? What's blown up? Asked Savardin, still on the floor. My lord, she added. She's split, I explained. It started at Garsed. She was appalled by what she'd done, but she couldn't decide how to react. She's been secretly moving against herself ever since. The reforms, getting rid of ancillaries, stopping the annexations, opening up assignments to lower houses, she did all of that. And Ime was the other part of her, building up a base and resources to go to war against herself and put things back the way they had been. And the whole time, all of her has been pretending not to know it was happening, because as soon as she admitted it, the conflict would be in the open and unavoidable. But you said it straight out to all of me, me and I acknowledged, because I couldn't exactly pretend the rest of me wasn't interested in Savard and Vendai's second return. Or what had happened to you. You showed up so publicly, so obviously, I couldn't hide it, and pretend it hadn't happened, and only talk to you myself. And now I can't ignore it anymore. Why would you do such a thing? It wasn't any order I ever gave you. No, I agreed, it wasn't. And surely you guessed what would happen if you did such a thing. Yes. I could be my ancillary self again, unsmiling, no satisfaction in my voice. Anander considered me a moment and then made a humph sound, as though she'd reached some conclusion that surprised her. Get up off the floor, citizen, she said to Savardin. Savardin rose, brushing her trouser legs with one gloved hand. Are you all right, Breck? Breck, interrupted me and I, before I could answer, stepping off the dais and striding past. Is the last remaining fragment of a grief-crazed AI, which has just managed to trigger a civil war. She turned to me. Is that what you wanted? I haven't been crazed with grief for at least 10 years, I protested. And the civil war was going to happen anyway, sooner or later. I was rather hoping to avoid the worst of it. If we're extremely fortunate, that war will only cause decades of chaos and not tear the Rach apart completely. Come with me. Ships can't do that anymore, insisted Savardin, walking beside me. You made them that way, my lord, so they didn't lose their minds when their captains died, like they used to, or follow their captains against you. Me and I lifted an eyebrow. Not exactly. She found a panel on the wall by the door that had been previously invisible to me, yanked it open, and triggered the manual door switch. They still get attached, still have favorites. The door slid open. One-esque, shoot the guard. My arm swung up and I fired. The guard staggered back against the wall, reached for her own weapon, but slid to the floor and then lay still. Dead, because her armor retracted. I couldn't take that away without making them useless to me, Anandermi and I continued, oblivious to the person, the citizen she just ordered killed. Still explaining to Savardin, who frowned, not understanding. They have to be smart. They have to be able to think. Right, agreed Savardin. Her voice trembled, just slightly, the edge of her self-control wearing thin, I thought. And they're armed ships with engines capable of vaporizing planets. What am I going to do if they don't want to obey me? Threaten them? With what? A few strides had brought us to the door communicating with the temple. Anander opened that and stepped briskly into the chapel of legitimate political authority. Savardin made an odd sound at the back of her throat. An aborted laugh, or a noise of distress, I wasn't sure which. I thought they were just made so they had to do as they were told.
Well, exactly, said Anandermi and I, as we followed her through the temple's main hall.
Sounds from the concourse reached us, someone speaking urgently, voice pitched high and loud. The temple itself seemed deserted.
That's how they were made from the start. But their minds are complex, and it's a tricky proposition. The original designers did that by giving them an overwhelming reason to want to obey, which had advantages and rather spectacular disadvantages. I couldn't completely change what they were, I just adjusted it to suit me. I made obeying me an overriding priority for them. But I confused the issue when I gave Justice of Torin two me's to obey with conflicting aims. And then, I suspect, I unknowingly ordered the execution of a favorite. Didn't I?
She looked at me.
Not Justice of Torin's favorite. I wouldn't have been so foolish. But I never paid attention to you. I'd never have asked if someone was one Esk's favorite.
You thought no one would care about some nobody cook's daughter. I wanted to raise the gun, wanted to smash all that beautiful glass in the mortuary chapel as we passed it. Anandermi and I stopped, turned to look at me.
That wasn't me. Help me now. I'm fighting that other me even now, I'm quite certain. I wasn't ready to move openly, but now you've forced my hand. Help me, and I'll destroy her and remove her utterly from myself.
You can't, I said. I know what you are, better than anyone. She's you, and you're her. You can't remove her from yourself without destroying yourself. Because she's you.
Once I reach the docks, Anandermi and I said, as though it were an answer to what I had just said, I can find a ship. Any civilian ship will take me where I want to go without question. Any military ship will be a dicier proposition. But I can tell you one thing, Justice of Torin, one Esk. One thing I'm certain of. I've got more ships than she does.
Meaning what exactly? Asked Savardin.
Meaning, I guessed. The other Mianai is likely to lose an open battle, so she has a slightly better reason to want to stop this spreading any further. I could see Savardin didn't understand what that meant. She's held it back by concealing it from herself, but now all of her here...
Most of me, anyway, corrected Anandermi and I.
Now she's heard it straight out, she can't ignore it. Not here. But she might be able to prevent the knowledge from reaching the parts of her that aren't here. At least long enough to strengthen her position. Realization made Savardin's eyes widen.
She'll need to destroy the gates as soon as possible, but it can't work. The signal travels at the speed of light, surely. She can't possibly overtake it.
The information hasn't left the station yet, said Anandermi and I. There's always a slight delay. It would be far more efficient to destroy the palace instead.
Which would mean turning a warship engine on the entire station, vaporizing it, along with everyone on it.
And I'd have to destroy the whole palace to stop the information going any further. There isn't just one spot where my memories are stored. It's made hard to destroy or tamper with on purpose.
Do you think, I asked into Savardin's shocked silence, that even you could get a sword or a mercy to do that? Even with accesses?
How badly would you like the answer to that question? Asked Anandermi and I. You know I'm capable of it.
I do, I acknowledged. Which option do you prefer?
None of the currently available choices is very good, The loss of either the palace or the gates, or both, will cause disruption on an unprecedented scale all through Roch space. Disruption that will last for years simply because of the size of that space. Not destroying the palace and the gates, really they're still part of the problem, will ultimately be even worse.
Does Skyat Aur know what's going on? I asked.
Aur has been a thorn in my side for nearly 3,000 years, said Mianai, calmly, as though this were an ordinary casual conversation. So much moral indignation. I'd almost think they bred for it, but they're not all genetically related. But if I stray from the path of propriety and justice, I'm sure to hear about it from Aur.
Then why not get rid of them? Asked Savardin. Why go and make one inspector supervisor here?
Pain is a warning, said Anander Mianai. What would happen if you removed all discomfort from your life? No, Mianai continued, ignoring Savardin's obvious distress at her words. I value that moral indignation. I encourage it.
No, you don't, I said. By now we were on the concourse. Security and military herded sections of the frightened crowd. Many of them would have implants, would have been receiving information from station when it suddenly cut out, with no explanation. A ship's captain I didn't know spotted us and hurried over.
My lord, she said, bowing.
Get these people off the concourse, captain, Anander Mianai said, and clear the corridors as quickly and safely as you can. Continue to cooperate with station security. I'm working to resolve this as quickly as possible.
As Anander Mianai spoke, a flash of movement caught my eye. Gun. Instinctively, I raised my armor, saw the person holding the gun was one of the people who had been following us on the concourse, just before security had summoned us. The Lord of the Roch must have sent orders before she triggered her device and cut off all communications, before she knew about the Gar Sedai gun. The captain Anander Mianai had been speaking to recoiled, visibly startled by the sudden appearance of my armor. I raised my own gun, and a hammer-hard blow hit me from the side. Someone else had shot at me. I fired, hit the person holding the gun. She fell, her own shot wild, hitting the temple facade behind me, shattering some god, bright-colored chips flying. Sudden, shocked silence from the already frightened citizens along the concourse. I turned, looked along the trajectory of the bullet that had hit me, saw panicked citizens and the sudden silver gleam of armor. This other shooter had seen me shoot the first, didn't know armor wouldn't help her. Half a meter from her, another flash of silver as someone else armored herself. Citizens between me and my targets moving unpredictably, but I was used to crowds of the frightened and the hostile. I fired and fired again. The armor disappeared, both my targets fallen. Savardin said,
Fuck! You are an ancillary!
We'd better get off the concourse, said Anander Mianai, and to the nameless captain beside her, Captain, get these people to safety.
But, the captain began, but we were already moving away, Savardin and Anander Mianai staying low, moving as speedily as they could. I wondered briefly what was happening in other parts of the station. Aumaw Palace was huge. There were 4 other concourses, though all were smaller than this one, and level upon level of homes, workplaces, schools, public spaces, all of it full of citizens who would certainly be frightened and confused. If nothing else, anyone who lived here knew the necessity of following emergency procedures, wouldn't stop to argue or wonder once the order to seek shelter had gone out. But of course, station couldn't give that order. I couldn't know or help.
"Who's in the system?" I asked, as soon as we were out of earshot, climbing down an emergency access ladder well, my armor retracted.
"Near enough to matter, you mean?" Anandermi and I answered from above me. 3 swords and 4 mercies in easy shuttle distance.
Any order from Anandermi and I on the station would have to come by shuttle because of the communications blackout.
I'm not worried about them at this very moment. There's no possibility of giving them orders from here.
And the instant there would be, the instant that blackout was raised, the entire question would already be settled. The knowledge Anandermi and I was so desperate to hide from herself, already speeding toward the gates that would take it through all of Rach space. Is anyone docked? I asked. Right now, those would be the only ships that mattered.
Only a shuttle from Mercy of Collar, said Anandermi and I, sounding half amused. It's mine.
Are you certain? And when she didn't answer, I said, Captain Vell isn't yours.
You got that impression too, did you?
Anandermi and I's voice was definitely amused now. Above me, above Anandermi and I, Savardin climbed, silent except for her shoes on the ladder rungs. I saw a door, halted, pulled the latch, swung it open, and peered into the corridor beyond. I recognized the area behind the dock offices. Once we'd all clambered into the corridor and shut the emergency door, Anandermi and I strode ahead, Savardin and me following.
How do we know she's the one she says she is? Savardin asked me very quietly. Her voice still shook, and her jaw looked tight. I was surprised she hadn't curled up in a corner somewhere or fled.
It doesn't matter which one she is, I said, not making any attempt to lower my voice. I don't trust any of her. If she tries to go anywhere near Mercy of Collar's shuttle, you're going to take this gun and shoot her. All of what she'd said to me might easily be a ruse, intended to get me to help her to the docks, and to Mercy of Collar, so she could destroy the station herself.
You don't need the Garcedi gun to shoot me, Anandermi and I said without looking behind her. I'm not armored. Well, some of me is, but not me. Not most of me.
She turned her head briefly to look at me.
That is troublesome, isn't it?
With my free hand, I gestured my lack of concern or sympathy. We turned a corner and stopped cold, confronted with Inspector Adjunct Kate, holding a stun stick, the sort of thing station security might use. She must have heard us talking in the corridor, because she evinced no surprise at our appearance, just a look of terrified determination.
Inspector Supervisor says I'm not to let anyone past.
Her eyes were wide, her voice unsure. She looked at Anandermi and I.
Especially not you.
Anandermi and I laughed. Quiet, I said, or Savardin will shoot you. Anandermi and I raised an eyebrow, plainly disbelieving that Savardin could bring herself to do any such thing. But she was silent. Douse Kate, I said, in the language I knew had been her first. Do you remember the day you came to the lieutenant's house and found the tyrant there? You were afraid, and you grabbed my hand. Her eyes, impossibly, grew wider. You must have woken before anyone else in your house, or they'd never have let you come. Not after what happened the night before.
But
I must speak with Skyot Auer.
You're alive,
she said, eyes still wide, still not quite believing.
Is the lieutenant? Inspector Supervisor will be so.
She's dead, I interrupted before she could get any further. I'm dead. I'm all that's left. I have to speak to Skyot Auer right now. The tyrant will stay here, and if she won't, then you should hit her as hard as you can. I had thought Douse-Kate was mainly astonished, but now tears welled, and one dropped onto her sleeve, where she held the stick at the ready.
All right, she said, I will.
She looked at Anandermi and I and lifted the stick just slightly, the threat plain. Though it did strike me as foolhardy to post no one here but Douse-Kate. What's the inspector supervisor doing?
She sent people to manually lock down all the docks.
That would take a lot of people and a long time. It explained why Douse-Kate was here by herself. I thought of storm shutters rolling down in the lower city.
She said it was just like that night in Oars, and the tyrant had to be doing it.
Anandermi and I listened to all this, bemused. Savardin seemed to have passed into some sort of shocked state, beyond astonishment. You stay here, I said to Anandermi and I in Rodchai, or Douse-Kate will stun you.
Yes, I got that much, said Anandermi and I. I see I didn't make a very positive impression when last we met, citizen.
Everyone knows you killed all those people, Douse-Kate said.
Two more tears escaped.
And blamed the lieutenant for it.
I had thought she was too young to have such strong feelings about the event. Why are you crying?
I'm scared.
Not taking her eyes off Anandermi and I, or lowering the stick. That struck me as very sensible. Come on, Savardin. I walked past Douse-Kate. Voices sounded ahead, where the outer office lay, past a turning. One step and then the next. It had never been anything else. Savardin let out a convulsive breath. It might have started as a laugh, or something she'd wanted to say.
Well, she said then, we survived the bridge.
That was easy. I stopped and checked under my brocaded jacket, counting magazines, even though I already knew how many I had. Shifted one from under the waistband of my trousers to a jacket pocket. This is not going to be easy, or end half as well. Are you with me?
Always,
she said, voice still oddly steady, though I was sure she was on the point of collapse.
Haven't I already said that?
I didn't understand what she meant, but now wasn't the time to wonder or ask. Then let's go.
Chapter 22.
We rounded the corner, my gun at the ready, and found the outer office empty. Not silent. Inspector Supervisor Skyot's voice sounded outside, slightly muted through the wall.
I appreciate that, Captain, but I'm ultimately responsible for the safety of the docks.
An answer, muffled, words indistinguishable, but I thought I recognized the voice.
I stand by my actions, Captain, Skyot Auer answered as Savardin and I came through the office and reached the wide lobby just outside.
Captain Vell stood, her back to an open lift shaft, a lieutenant and two troops behind her. The lieutenant still had pastry crumbs on her brown jacket. They must have climbed down the shaft, because I was quite certain station controlled the lifts. In front of us, facing them and all the lobby's watching gods, stood Skyot Auer and four dock inspectors. Captain Vell saw me, saw Savardin, and frowned slightly in surprise.
Captain Savardin, she said.
Inspector Supervisor Skyot didn't turn around, but I could guess what she was thinking. That she'd sent Douse-Kate to defend the back way in all by herself.
She's fine, I said, answering her, and not Captain Vell.
She let me past. And then, not having planned it, the words seeming to come out of my mouth of their own volition, Lieutenant, it's me. I'm Justice of Torin 1-esque. As soon as I said it, I knew she would turn. I raised the gun to aim it at Captain Vell. Don't move, Captain. But she hadn't. She and the rest of Mercy of Collar stood puzzling out what I had just said. Skyot Hour turned.
Douse Kate would never have let me by otherwise, I said, and remembered Douse Kate's hopeful question.
Lieutenant On is dead. Justice of Torin is destroyed. It's only me now.
You're lying, she said, but even with my attention on Captain Vell and the others, I could see she believed me.
One of the lift doors came jerkily open, and Anander, me, and I jumped out, and then another. The first turned, fist raised, as the second lunged for her. Soldiers and dock inspectors backed reflexively away from the struggling Ananders, into my line of fire.
Mercy of Collar, stand clear, I shouted, and the soldiers moved, even Captain Vell.
I fired twice, hitting one Anander in the head and the other in the back. Everyone else stood frozen, shocked.
Inspector Supervisor, I said, you can't let the Lord of the Roch reach Mercy of Collar. She'll breach its heat shield and destroy us all.
One Anander still lived, struggled vainly to stand.
You've got it backward, she gasped, bleeding.
Dying, I thought, unless she got to a medic soon. But it hardly mattered. This was only one of thousands of bodies. I wondered what was happening in the private center of the palace proper. What sort of violence had broken out?
I'm not the one you want to shoot.
If you're Anander, me and I said, then I want to shoot you. Whichever half she represented, this body hadn't heard all of that conversation in the audience hall, still thought it possible that I was on her side. She gasped, and for a moment I thought she was gone. Then she said faintly,
My fault.
And then,
If I were me,
a brief moment of pained amusement,
I'll have gone to security.
Except, of course, unlike Anander Mianai's personal guard, and whoever had shot me on the concourse, station security's armed with stun sticks and armored with helmets and vests. They never had to face opponents with guns. I had a gun, and because of who I was deadly with it. This Mianai had missed that part of the conversation as well. Have you noticed my gun? I asked. Have you recognized it? She wasn't armored, hadn't realized that the gun I had shot her with was different from any other gun. Hadn't had, I thought, time or attention to wonder how anyone on the station could have had a gun she didn't know about. Or maybe she just assumed I had shot her with a weapon she'd hidden from herself. But she saw now. No one else understood. No one else recognized the weapon, except Savardin, who already knew. I can stand right here and pick off anyone who comes through the shafts, just like I did you. I've got plenty of ammunition. She didn't answer. Shock would defeat her in a matter of minutes, I thought. Before any of the Mercy of Collars could react, a dozen vested and helmeted station security came thunking down the lift shaft. The first six tumbled out into the corridor, then stopped, shocked and confused by the dead Anander Mianai's lying on the ground. I had spoken the truth. I could pick them off, could shoot them in this moment of frozen surprise. But I didn't want to. Security, I said, as firmly and authoritatively as I could, noting which fresh magazine was nearest to hand. Whose orders are you following? The senior security officer turned and stared at me, saw Skyot Hour and her dock inspectors facing Captain Vell and her two lieutenants, hesitated as she tried to put us together in some shape she understood.
I am ordered by the Lord of the Roch to secure the docks, she announced.
As she spoke, I saw on her face the moment she connected the dead Mianai's with a gun I held ready, the gun I shouldn't have had.
I have the dock secured, said Inspector Supervisor Skyot.
All due respect, Inspector Supervisor.
Senior Security sounded reasonably sincere.
The Lord of the Roch has to get to a gate so she can send for help. We're to ensure she makes it safely to a ship.
Why not her own security? I asked, already knowing the answer, as Senior Security did not. It was plain on her face that the question hadn't occurred to her. Captain Vell said brusque,
My own ship's shuttle is docked. I'd be more than happy to take my lord where she wants to go.
This with a pointed look at Skyot Hour. Another Anander Mianai was almost certainly in that shaft behind those security officers. Savardin, I said, escort Senior Security to where Inspector Adjunct Douse Kate is. And to Senior Security's look of dubious alarm, It will make a number of things clear to you. You'll still outnumber us, and if you're not back within 5 minutes, they can take me down. Or try to. They had probably never, any of them, met an ancillary, and didn't know how dangerous I could be.
And if I won't? Asked Senior Security.
I had left my face expressionless, but now in answer, I smiled, as sweetly as I could manage. Try it and see. The smile unnerved her, and she obviously had no idea what was going on, and knew it. Knew things weren't adding up to anything she could make sense of. Likely her entire career had been spent dealing with drunks and arguments between neighbors.
5 minutes, she said.
Good choice, I said, still smiling. Do please leave the stun stick behind.
This way, citizen, Savardin, all elegant servant's politeness.
When they had gone, Captain Vell said urgently,
Security, we outnumber them despite the gun.
Them?
The apparently next-ranking security officer was plainly still confused, still hadn't worked out what was going on. And I realized security was used to thinking of Inspector Supervisor Skyot, indeed all of the dock inspectors, as being allies. And of course, military officers held both dock authorities and station security forces in mild contempt. A fact security here was certainly aware of.
Why is there a them?
A look of frustrated irritation crossed Captain Vell's face. All this time, muttered words had been passing from the security on solid ground to the security still hanging in the shaft. I was certain an Anander Mianai was with them, and that the only thing that had kept her from herself ordering security to rush me was her realizing that despite what station, and certainly her own sensors had told her, I had a gun. She needed to protect her own particular body, now she couldn't rely on any of the others. That and the lag time of questions and information, passing from citizen to citizen, up and down the shaft, had kept her from acting until now. But surely she would move soon. And, as if in answer to my thought, the whispering in the shaft intensified, and the security officers shifted their stances, just slightly, in a way that told me they were about to charge. Just then, Senior Security returned. She turned to look at me as she passed, a horrified expression on her face, said to her now-hesitating officers,
I don't know what to do. The Lord of the Roch is back there, and she says the Inspector Supervisor and this person are acting under her direct orders, and we're not to allow even one of her on the docks or onto any ship, under any circumstances.
Her fear and her confusion were evident. I knew how she felt, but this wasn't the time to sympathize. She asked you, and not her own guard, because her own guard is fighting her, and probably each other, depending on which of them got orders from which of her.
I don't know who to believe,
said Senior Security. But I thought Security's natural inclination to side with Dock Authority might tip the balance in our favor. And Captain Vell and her lieutenant and troops had lost the initiative, lost any chance to disarm me, with Security in the balance but ready to tip my way, them and their stun sticks. Maybe if the Mercy of Collars had ever seen combat, ever seen an enemy that wasn't a training exercise, hadn't spent so long on a Mercy, ferrying supplies or running long dull patrols, or visiting palaces and eating pastry. Eating pastry and having tea with associates who had decided political opinions. You don't even know, I said to Captain Vell, which one is giving which orders. She frowned, puzzled. She hadn't entirely understood the situation then. I'd assumed she knew more than she did.
You're confused, said Captain Vell. It isn't your fault. The enemy has misinformed you, and your mind was never your own to begin with.
My lord is leaving, called a security officer.
As a body, security looked toward Senior Security, who looked at me. None of this distracted Inspector Supervisor Skyot.
And just who, Captain, is the enemy?
You, Captain Vell answered, vehement and bitter. And everyone like you who aids and encourages what's happened to us in the last 500 years. 500 years of alien infiltration and corruption.
The word she used was a close cousin of the one the Lord of the Roch had used to describe my pollution of temple offerings. Captain Vell turned to me again.
You're confused, but you were made by Anander Mianai to serve Anander Mianai, not her enemies.
There is no way to serve Anander Mianai without serving her enemy, I said. Senior Security, Inspector Supervisor Skyot has seen to the docks. You secure any airlocks you can reach. We need to be certain no one leaves this station. The continued existence of this station depends on it.
Yes, sir,
said Senior Security, and began to consult with her officers. She spoke with you, I guessed, turning back to Captain Vell. She told you the Presger had infiltrated the Roch in order to subvert and destroy it. I saw answering recognition on Captain Vell's face. I had guessed correctly. She couldn't have told that lie to anyone who remembered what the Presger did when they thought humans were their legitimate prey. They're powerful enough to destroy us whenever they wish. No one is subverting the Lord of the Roch except the Lord of the Roch. She's been secretly at war with herself for 1,000 years. I forced her to see it, all of her here. And she'll do anything to prevent having to acknowledge this to the rest of herself, including using Mercy of Collar to destroy the station before that information can leave here. Shocked silence, then Inspector Supervisor Skyot said,
We can't control all the accesses to the hull. If she goes outside and finds a launch unattended or willing to take her,
which would be anyone she found? Because who here would think of disobeying the Lord of the Roch? And there was no way to broadcast a warning to everyone, or to ensure that anyone believed the warning. Carry the message as quickly as you can, as far as you can, I said, and let the omens fall as they will. And I need to warn Mercy of Collar not to let anyone aboard. Captain Vell made a quick, angry motion.
Don't... Captain, I said,
I'd rather not have to tell Mercy of Collar I killed you. The shuttle pilot was armed and armored and unwilling to leave without her captain's direct order. I was unwilling to allow Captain Vell anywhere near the shuttle. If the pilot had been an ancillary, I wouldn't have hesitated to kill her. But as it was, I shot her in the leg, and let Save Arden and the two dock inspectors, who'd come to do the manual undock for me, drag her onto the station. "Put pressure on the wound," I said to Save Arden. "I don't know if it's possible to reach medical." I thought of the security, soldiers, and palace guards all over the station, who likely had conflicting orders and priorities, and hoped that all the civilians were safely sheltered by now.
"I'm coming with you," said Save Arden, looking up from where she knelt, half on the shuttle pilot's back, binding her wrists.
"No, you might have some authority with Captain Vell's sort. Maybe even with Captain Vell herself. You do have 1,000 years seniority, after all."
1,000 years back pay, said a dock inspector in an awed voice. "Like that will ever happen," said Save Arden, and then, "Breck,"
and recollecting herself,
"Ship."
"I don't have time," I said, brusque and flat. A brief flash of anger on her face, and then,
"You're right."
But her voice shook just slightly, and her hands. I turned without saying anything more and boarded the shuttle, pushing off from the station's gravity into the shuttle's lack of it, and closed the lock, then kicked myself over to the pilot's seat, waving away a globule of blood, and strapped in. Thunking and pounding told me undocking had started. I had one wired-in camera four, which showed me a few of the ships around the palace, shuttles, miners, little tenders and sail pods, the bigger passenger and cargo ships either on their way out or waiting for permission to approach. Mercy of Collar, white-hulled, awkward-shaped, its deadly engines larger than the rest of it, was somewhere out there. And beyond all of this, the beacons that lit the gates that brought ships from system to system. The station would have gone utterly, suddenly silent to them. The pilots and captains of these ships must be confused or frightened. I hoped none of them would be foolish enough to approach without permission from dock authorities. My only other wired camera, aft, showed me the gray hull of the station. The last thunk of the undocking vibrated through the shuttle, and I set the controls on manual and started out. Slowly, carefully, because I couldn't see to either side. Once I judged myself clear, I picked up speed, and then sat back to wait. Even at this shuttle's top speed, Mercy of Collar was half a day away. I had time to think. After all this time, after all this effort, here I was. I had hardly dared hope that I could revenge myself so thoroughly. Hardly hoped that I could shoot even one Anandermian eye. And I had shot four. And more Anandermian eyes were almost certainly killing each other back there in the palace as she battled herself for control of the station, and ultimately of the Roch itself. The result of my message. None of it would bring back Lieutenant Onn. Or me. I was all but dead, had been for 20 years, just a last, tiny fragment of myself that had managed to exist a bit longer than the rest. Each action I took, a very good candidate for the last thing I'd ever do. A song bubbled up into my memory. Oh, have you gone to the battlefield, armored and well-armed, and shall dreadful events force you to drop your weapons? And that led inexplicably to the memory of the children in the Temple Plaza in Ors. 1, 2, my aunt told me, 3, 4, the corpse soldier. I had very little to do now besides sing to myself, and no one to disturb. No worries I might choose some tune that would lead someone to recognize or suspect me, or that anyone would complain about the quality of my voice. I opened my mouth to sing out, in a way I hadn't for years, when I was checked mid-breath by the sound of something banging against the airlock. This sort of shuttle had two airlocks. One would only open when docked with a ship or a station. The other was a smaller emergency hatch along the side. It was just the sort of hatch I'd used to board the shuttle I'd taken when I'd left Justice of Torin so long ago. The sound came one more time and then stopped. It occurred to me that it might only have been some debris knocking into the hull as I passed. Then again, if I were in Anandermianai's place, I'd try anything I could think of to achieve my aims, and I couldn't see the outside of the shuttle with communications blocked, only those two narrow views fore and aft. I might well be bringing Anandermianai to mercy of collar myself. If someone was out there, if it wasn't just debris, it was Anandermianai. How many of her? The airlock was small and easily defensible, but it would be easiest not to have to defend it at all. It would be best to keep her from opening the airlock. Surely the communications blackout didn't reach much farther away from the palace. I quickly made the changes in heading that would steer me away from Mercy of Collar, but still, I hoped, toward the outer edges of the communications block. I could speak to Mercy of Collar and never go any closer to it. That done, I turned my attention to the airlock. Both doors of the lock were built to swing inward so that any pressure difference would force them shut. And I knew how to remove the inner door, had cleaned and maintained shuttles just like this one for decades, for centuries. Once I removed the inner door, it would be nearly impossible to open the outer one, so long as there was air in the shuttle. It took me 12 minutes to remove the hinges and maneuver the door to a place where I could secure it. It should have taken 10, but the pins were dirty and didn't slide as smoothly as they should have, once I'd released their catches. Human troops shirking, I was sure. I'd never have allowed such a thing on any of my own shuttles. Just as I finished, the shuttle's console began to speak, in a flat, even voice I knew belonged to a ship. Shuttle, respond! Shuttle, respond! Mercy of Collar, I said, kicking myself forward. This is Justice of Torin piloting your shuttle. No immediate answer. I didn't doubt what I'd said had been enough to shock Mercy of Collar into silent surprise. Do not let anyone aboard you. In particular, do not let any version of Anandermianai anywhere near you. If she's already there, keep her away from your engines. Now I could access the cameras that weren't physically wired. I hit the switch that would show me a panoramic view of what was outside the shuttle. I wanted more than just that forward camera view. Hit the buttons that would broadcast my words to anyone listening. All ships. Whether they would listen or obey, I couldn't predict, but that wasn't something I could realistically control anyway. Do not let anyone aboard you. Do not let Anandermianai aboard you under any circumstances. Your lives depend on it. The lives of everyone on the station depend on it. As I spoke, the gray bulkhead seemed to dissolve away. The main console, the seats, the two airlock hatches remained, but otherwise, I might have been floating unprotected in vacuum. Three vacuum-suited figures clung to handholds around the airlock I'd disabled. One had turned her head to look at a sail pod that had swung dangerously close. A fourth was pulling herself forward along the hull. She's not aboard me, said Mercy of Collar's voice through the console, but she's on your hull and ordering my officers to assist her, ordering me to order you to allow her into the shuttle. How can you be Justice of Torin? Not, what do you mean, don't let the Lord of the Roch aboard, I noticed. I came with Captain Savarden, I said. The Anandermianai who'd come forward clipped herself to one handhold, then another, and pulled a gun from the tool holder on her suit. What is the pod doing? The sail pod was still too close to me. The pilot is offering help to the people on your hull. She's only just realized it's the Lord of the Roch, who's told her to back off. The sail pod would do the Lord of the Roch very little good. It was built for only very short trips, more a toy than anything else. It would never make it as far as Mercy of Collar. Not in one piece, and not with its passengers alive and breathing. Are there any other Ananders outside the station? There don't appear to be. The Anander man eye with a gun, extended armor and a flash of silver that covered her vacuum suit, held the gun against the shuttle's hull and fired. I've heard it said that guns won't fire in a vacuum, but really it depends on the gun. This one fired. The impact, a bang, that I could feel where I clung to the pilot's seat. The force of the shot pushed her back, but not far, securely clipped as she was to the hull. She fired again, bang, and again and again. Some shuttles were armored. Some even had a larger version of my own armor. This shuttle wasn't, didn't. This shuttle's hull was built to withstand a fair number of random impacts. But it wasn't built to endure continued stress on the same spot over and over again. Bang! She had thought through her inability to open the airlock, realized that whoever was piloting this shuttle was her enemy, realized that I had removed the inner door and that the outer wouldn't open until the air was out of the entire shuttle. If Anander me and I could get in, she could patch the bullet hole and repressurize the shuttle. Even after a hull breach, the shuttle, unlike the sail pod, would have enough air to take her all the way to Mercy of Collar. If she had tried to order the palace's destruction from where she hung on to the side of this shuttle, she had failed. More likely, I realized, she'd known from the beginning such an order would fail and hadn't tried to give it. She needed to get aboard a ship, order it closer to the palace, and breach its heat shield herself. She wouldn't be able to get anyone else to do it for her. If Mercy of Collar was correct, and there were no other Ananders outside the station, all I had to do was get rid of these. The rest, whatever was happening on the station, I would have to leave to Skyot and Savarden, and Anander me and I. I remember the last time we met, said Mercy of Collar. It was at Preed na Denny. A trap. We never met. Bang! The sail pod moved away, but not far. Until now. And I was never at Preed na Denny. But what did it prove? That I knew that. Verifying my identity might have been easy if I hadn't disabled or hidden so many of my implants. I thought for a moment, considering. And then I spoke a string of words, the closest I could get with my single human mouth, to the way I would have identified myself to another ship so long ago. Silence, punctuated by another shot against the shuttle hull. Are you really Justice of Torin? Asked Mercy of Collar at length. Where have you been, and where's the rest of you? And what's happening? Where I've been is a long story. The rest of me is gone. Anander me and I breached my heat shield. Bang! The forward Anander ejected the magazine from her gun, slowly and methodically, and inserted another. The other still huddled around the airlock. I assume you know what's going on with Anander me and I. Only partially, said Mercy of Collar. I find I'm having difficulty saying what I think is happening. No surprise at all to me. The Lord of the Roch visited you in secret and placed some new accesses, probably other things, orders, instructions, in secret because she was hiding what she'd done from herself. Back at the palace, it seemed ages ago now, but it had only been a few hours. I told all of her straight out what was happening. That she was divided, moving against herself. She doesn't want that knowledge to go any further, and there's a part of her that wants to use you to destroy the station before the information can get out. She'd rather do that than face the results of that knowledge. Silence from Mercy of Collar. You're bound to obey her, but I know. My throat closed up, I swallowed. I know there's only so far you can be forced to go. But it would be extremely unfortunate for the residents of Amaw Palace if you discovered that point after having killed them all. Bang! Steady, patient, Anandermi and I only needed one very small hole and some time. And there was plenty of time. Which one destroyed you? Does it matter? I don't know, answered Mercy of Collar, from the console, voice calm. I've been unhappy with the situation for some time. Anandermi and I had said that Mercy of Collar was hers, but Captain Vell wasn't. That had to be uncomfortable for it. Could potentially be uncomfortable for me and extremely unfortunate for the palace, if Mercy of Collar was sufficiently attached to its captain. The one that destroyed me was the one Captain Vell supports. Not, I think, the one that visited you. I'm not completely certain, though. How are we supposed to tell them apart when they're all the same person? Where is my captain? Said Mercy of Collar. It said something to me that the ship had waited this long to ask. She was fine when I left her. Your lieutenant, too. Bang! I did injure the shuttle pilot. She wouldn't leave her station. I hope she's all right. Mercy of Collar, whichever Lord of the Roch has your support, I beg you not to let any on board or obey her orders. The firing stopped. The Lord of the Roch was worried, perhaps, that her gun would overheat. Still, she had plenty of time, no need to rush. I see what the Lord of the Roch is doing to the shuttle, said Mercy of Collar. That in itself would be enough to tell me something is wrong. But of course, Mercy of Collar had more indications than just that. The communications blackout, which resembled what had happened on Shiserna 20 years ago, probably only reported in rumor, but still sobering, assuming rumors had reached this far. My, Justice of Torren's disappearance. Its own clandestine visit from the Lord of the Roch. Its captain's political opinions. Silence. The four Anandermianis clinging motionless to the shuttle hull. You still had your ancillaries, said Mercy of Collar. Yes. I like my soldiers, but I miss having ancillaries. That reminded me. They aren't doing maintenance as they should. The hinges on the airlock door were very sticky. I'm sorry. It doesn't matter right now, I said, and it struck me that something similar might have delayed Anandermi and I's attempts to open the lock on her side. But you'll want to have your officers get after them. Anander began firing again. Bang! It's funny, Mercy of Collar said. You're what I've lost, and I'm what you've lost. I suppose, bang. Occasionally, over the past 20 years, I had had moments when I didn't feel quite so utterly lonely, lost, and helpless as I had since the moment Justice of Torren had vaporized behind me. This wasn't one of those moments. I can't help you, said Mercy of Collar. No one I could send would get there in time. And besides, it was an open question to me whether in the end Mercy of Collar would help me or the Lord of the Roch. It was best not to let Anander inside this shuttle, near its steering or even its communications equipment. I know. If I didn't find some way to get rid of these Ananders, and find it soon, everyone on the palace station would die. I knew every millimeter of this shuttle, or others just like it. There had to be something I could use, something I could do. I still had the gun, but I would have just as difficult a time getting through the